Let's go to the second day, verse 6. God said, let there be firmament in the midst of the waters. Now that's the atmosphere. You can tell that by comparing it to verse 20, where it says the birds fly in the firmament. Okay? And divide it from the waters, and divide the waters from the waters, and God made the firmament, the atmosphere, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. Now you see there, God divided water. He put some of it under the atmosphere and some above it. That's where we had a water vapor canopy of probably transparent vapor. You see, it can't rain 40 days and 40 nights with the water vapor in the air that's there now. It can only rain between 8 and 20 minutes in a good downpour. You know, a real deluge. So where'd the water come from the flood of Noah? God just told you in verse 7. From the water he put above the firmament, which is not there today. I mean, it's not there now. And from the water, from the fountains of the deep that broke up. So I'm showing you that this, the whole story is falling out before us right now. God called the firmament heaven. Now there are three heavens in the Bible. Three heavens. This is one of them. The firmament is one of the heavens. So here's the earth. Let this be the earth. There are three heavens in the Bible. Seven heavens is not biblical. It's not Christian. Talking about seven heavens is from the occult teaching. The first heaven is our atmosphere that the Bible mentions. The second heaven is where the stars are located. The Bible talks about, you know, the planets and the sun and the moon and the stars. That's the second heaven. And the third heaven that the Bible talks about is where the throne of God is. The Bible also calls that paradise. When Christians die, they immediately go to the third heaven, which is the presence of God, paradise. Okay? Verse 9, God said, observe, boy, God's saying, everything is happening by command. Fiat. God said, let the waters, and when he said let it, it happened. Let the waters be gathered under the heaven, be gathered together into one place, and let dry land appear. And it was so. In other words, as I told you at the beginning, water was all over the place, and now God begins to bring the continents up out of the water. God called the dry land earth. The gathering together of the waters he called seas. God saw it was good. Notice God saying everything he created is good. See, it's terrible for us to teach and believe that a perfect God, an all-powerful God, created originally something that wasn't perfect, a chaos. No, he didn't. He did not, quote, bring order out of chaos. He made everything just right to start with. And then man sinned and messed it up. Okay? But don't worry, God is going to restore the whole thing. I read the last chapter in the book. See, in other words, man may have muddied up the water, but God's going to distill it. And the earth brought forth, look at verse 11. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, or grass, herb yielding seed after its kind, the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Observe, the first life mentioned took place on the earth, not in the sea. No life was in the sea. Evolution teaches life began in the sea, but God doesn't. It says the first life, first living things were on the land, and they were plants. See, we're teaching maybe it was a half plant, half animal in evolution. Something like a euglena. God says, no, I'll tell you if you guys really want to know. And observe, on the very day that he didn't say, I'm going to start off with something simple and see if I can work up. Let's see, algae maybe first. No, God just says on the first day that he made living things, he went all the way to fruit trees. Fruit-bearing trees. That doesn't just mean fruit trees, but there's different kind of fruit. But, okay. And the earth, verse 12, brought forth this. And then at the last of that verse, it says, God saw that was good, and the evening and morning were the third day. That's why the Jewish day begins with an evening. The Jewish day begins around 6 o'clock with the sun going down. Why? Because God said that in Genesis, that he made an evening first and then a morning. And that's why the Jews do this. Verse 14, God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night for a purpose, for signs and seasons and days and years. You say, for what kind of signs? Oh, how about Numbers 23? God made a prophecy through a false prophet, Balaam. Said there's going to come someday a star out of Jacob. It's going to set right over Bethlehem when Jesus is born. That was a sign, wasn't it? Sign. You ever read in the book of Revelation and in a lot of the prophets that in the last days before the Lord Jesus returns, the moon will turn blood red and the sun will cease to shine. It'll go dark. That's quite a sign. I mean, wouldn't you say, how about down in Egypt? Remember in Egypt, when the plagues came to Egypt, God blacked out the sun for three solid days and nights. I'd say that was a considerable sign. If you had lived in Egypt, baby, you'd have started thinking about getting your act straight. That was a considerable sign. So God is showing us. In other words, what I'm trying to get you to see is he is not offering these as signs of the zodiac for astrological study. Okay? Not that kind of sign. Let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. Stop. People always say, well, what are the stars and the sun and the moon and all that out there for? God just told you. Read Genesis chapter 1. You can be smarter than every college professor walking the planet. I know why they're all out there. Verse 15. To give light upon the earth. Well, you know, the earth must be pretty unique. Do you see the uniqueness of the earth? Absolutely. In order to have life as we know it, you must have water vapor and oxygen. 99% of all the water vapor and oxygen we've ever seen in the known universe is located on this planet. And God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day, that's the sun, and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. So we see here, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. See, I told you, that defined the second heaven, didn't it? We just defined it. Son of a gun, he said, that was a heaven also. But it wasn't the first heaven. The first heaven ended with that little water up there at the top. He said the top of that was where the birds were flying in verse 20. You'll see it. But now he talks about a second heaven, and it's where the stars and the moon and the and all that goody is. Oh, in the Bible, easy. I've been telling y'all how easy this book is. You ought to read it sometimes. I recommend it. Especially you Christians. Okay? I take that back. Especially those of you that aren't. Okay? And it was good. God says in verse 18, it was good. And the evening and morning were the fourth day. All right? So look up here on the board. The sun, the moon, and the stars were on the fourth day. And there was a purpose for them. This was not random evolution. Verse 20. God said that the water bring forth abundantly. Now, finally, we're going to get some life out in the water. We've already had life on the land. The life on the land was the third day. My goodness, we've waited for two whole days to get something out there in the water, but the evolution said, no, it began in the water. Let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that has life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. Aha. See, there's that. And verse 21, God created. Now, let me talk to you about created. The word created there is also bara. Bara, it means out of nothing. Great sea monsters. All right, now let me just stop there. A lot of people go to verse 14 through 18 when it says that in verse 14 through 18, God used a different word than bara. And so people say, well, there was an earth before Adam. Satan ruled over it. It was destroyed with a flood. That's where the water came from here in verse 9. And then God cleansed it and brought it back. And this other word that we find in verse 14 through 18 for God creating means he made it to appear. So maybe it was all covered with a cloud, and then God took the cloud away. Please observe that just won't work. I've mentioned many reasons it won't, but look here. We're still baraing down here in verse 21. We're creating out of nothing down here. This word whale or sea. The only trouble is, now let me talk to you about that word. The word, the Hebrew word here is the word tannin, T-A-N-N-I-N. Now listen. That word means, it can be translated whale. That's not a mistranslation. But the trouble with translating whale is it leaves you thinking this word means only whales. But it doesn't. The Hebrew word tannin, listen to this, means a marine, or it can also mean a land monster. It could be translated a marine dragon or a land dragon, a sea monster or a hideous land animal. That's what that Hebrew word means. Ever hear things called dinosaurs? That word catches every one of them that would have been in the water or on the land. Plesiosaurs, mosasaurs, you name them. That word covered the whole ball of wax. So that's the only problem with using the word whale. See, that now, the original meaning of the word whale was much more inclusive. But the word whale is included in here. What I'm telling you is, baby, there were mammals there on this day. Not just what man has decided to call fish. There were reptiles, fish, and mammals, all covered by the word tannin. Praise God. Trust God. He's better than evolution. Verse 21. Observe that every living creature that moved, which the waters brought forth abundantly, after their kind. God said, after their kind. Now someone says, what do you mean by kind, Brother Floyd? Listen, kind, the word kind is not species. Got nothing to do with the word species. A kind simply means an animal that can reproduce with itself, got to be able to interbreed. Now species can interbreed, but there are many genera that can interbreed with each other. There are even some creatures that we've... See, the whole taxonomic system is artificial. The man's classification system of plants and animals is very artificial. To meet the Bible definition of kind, all you've got to be able to do is reproduce. In other words, any two bear would have done it. It didn't have to be Ursus horribilis, the grizzly bear. It didn't have to be Ursus maximus, the polar bear. It didn't have to be any specific kind, just any two bear. There's enough genetic difference in the DNA of any two bear that over a period of time, you can get any combination that's needed. We know that. In the middle 1500s, there were only three dog types in all of Europe. Every dog you've ever seen practically has come from interbreeding those three dog types, with a few exceptions of some Oriental dog types that have been, you know, brought in. In other words, there is tremendous variety possible in animals and in plants within the genetic code. But observe, when you breed them, you still get something you can tell as a dog. All the way from Dachshund to Great Dane. In fact, when they try to tell you from these fossils, you've seen the pictures of the horses. They said, now this horse, this was a horse, this was a horse, this was a horse. And I'm going to talk about more about that later at another session with you. This was a horse, this was a horse. We know they were all horses. No, we don't. There's only one way to know if something is of the same species or genera. Only one scientific way to know. And we're talking about science. And that is, you got to breed them. And nobody has ever successfully bred a couple of bones. The fossils don't breed. And that's the only scientific way to tell if two creatures are really closely kin. There's a lot of animals in nature that look closely kin, but they don't breed. Have you ever heard the old bull? You know, we hear this stuff all the time. Raccoons are kin to the bear. They're cousins. And you guys probably all told your children that. Where do you think that jazz came from? Don't you? Well, that's because we believe in evolution that we say that. If evolution is true, that might be true, but you can never prove it because the fossil bones we found can't reproduce with each other. What I'm telling you is, that's a myth. That's a fairy story. Coons aren't kin to bears. Coons were created different. That's a myth. Oh, bless God. Verse 24. God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after its kind, cattle and creeping things, and beast of the earth after its kind. In other words, to be a kind just so you can reproduce. And it says that God made the beast of the earth, in verse 25, of after its kind, cattle after their kind, everything that creeps on the earth after its kind. God saw it was good. Now, please observe that if evolution were true and all these animals were chewing each other up and killing each other, and someone says, oh, Brother Floyd, I just think it would be so beautiful, though, take such a brilliant God, so wonderful and ethereal, to think that God had done it through evolution step by step. You think that's beautiful? Have you ever seen a lion rip a zebra's guts out and eat him while he's still kicking? That's beauty? Man, your concept of beauty is sick. Struggle for survival is sick. It's awful. It's the result of sin. Now, I want you to observe as we continue to read. Yeah, it's sobered up a little bit here, doggone. I know this is hard that I'm saying this, but it's time we got sobered up. Verse 26, God said, now observe, it's still the sixth day. Let us make man in our image. Ha ha, God had already taken an image. His name is Jesus. Colossians 1:15 says, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. See, God's invisible. He's a spirit. So when he became an image, that's Jesus. And that's exactly what Colossians 1:15 says. Let's make man after our likeness and give man them dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over all the cattle, and over all the earth. Wait a minute. If Satan's still around and he had his kingdom on the earth, see, wait a minute. What'd you do with Satan? Satan had his kingdom on the earth according to the gap theory. How can we give Adam dominion over all the earth if it belongs to Satan? We got problems. And over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so God made man in his own image. An ape. Or an ape man. No, not like that. Jesus didn't look. In the image of God created him, male and female created him them. All right, he made the man first in the image of God, then he made the female. So we had a them. All right? And God blessed them. So please observe that Eve was made on the sixth day with Adam. Adam didn't pine away for 24 days, 24 years getting lonely. They were both made on the same day. Praise God. God's smart, isn't he? He knew us fellas could hardly make it a day without a girl. Now, girls, you're not so bad off. He made Adam in chapter 2 out of dirt. Just old dirt. But you were made out of flesh and bone. That's pretty nice. You know that old saying, sticks and snails and puppy dog tails and sugar and spice and everything nice? Well, that isn't true, but it came closer than you thought. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply. This is the first commandment ever given to a human being. Be fruitful and multiply. Therefore, sex isn't dirty. The first thing God told Adam and Eve was, get to it. Being a red-blooded American boy, I'd figure he did. If God, the boss, told you to get busy and multiply, I'd say that was one of the first things they ever did. I'd be scared to disobey, wouldn't you? I'm trying to get you to see something. There's a lot of churches that teach that sex came after the fall. And that sex is actually kind of half dirty, but God kind of winks at it. You know, it's kind of one of those necessary evils. No, it isn't. He could make us out of peas. Rocks. How do you know that? John the Baptist said so. John, in Luke chapter 3. He said, man, God can even make Jews out of rocks. I want you to see that the first commandment God gave, that you can't, you young women in here, God never rescinded that. God never, hey, never anywhere in the Bible will you see where God changed that rule. Be fruitful and multiply. That's about as popular as a snake. Therefore, before they ever sinned, God had told them, get with it. Therefore, they had intercourse before they sinned. And the thing that shocked them was they didn't have the glory anymore after they sinned. That's what shocked them. You just don't know how good-looking a woman can be till you've seen her with the glory. Adam, poor Adam. Best-looking woman that ever lived, had that fantastic glow. And then he had to look at her. But it was reversible. She had to look at him. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth or replenish the earth. Now, some people, let's talk about that. People argue about that. Well, Floyd, how can you replenish something that ain't never been plenished? The primary definition of the word replenish, you can look it up in any dictionary, you can read any Greek, any Hebrew, anything you want to read. The primary definition means to fill. To make full or to stock. So in other words, the word replenish does not have to mean that first there was something there, it got wiped out, and you did something else. The secondary definition means to fill up or build up again. But the primary definition is to fill, to make full, or to stock. It's the word mala in Hebrew. I might add that the same word is used after the flood in Genesis chapter 9. In that time, they did replenish the earth in the sense that they restocked it. But that word can mean a restocking in the Hebrew or an original building up and filling. So don't hang a doctrine on a word that has two meanings. Just because it got used one way, one place. Listen, how many times have you ever used a word and used it one place, one time and another? In the example I already gave, I used the word for a ship, for an ocean-going boat. And in the same letter I'm writing someone, I might use it for an airplane, you know, but I'd make it clear. Okay. Verse 29 is going to really blow your mind. God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is on the face of the earth, every tree which is of the fruit of the tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for food. Nobody ate meat. Watch verse 30. And to every beast of the earth, every fowl of the air, to everything that creeps upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for food. It was so, and God saw everything he had made, everything he had made. Not chaos. Not chaos. He said everything he made was good. This was God's judgment of man before the fall. It was good. Yea, it was very good. And the morning and the evening were the sixth day. Please observe, beloved, in verse 29 and 30, though there were lions, tigers, bears, and all kinds of things like that, nobody ate meat. Everybody, everything ate plants. After the flood in Genesis chapter 9, 1656 years later, God said, now you can eat meat. You say, I have a hard time believing that story. Then you won't like the story in the Bible about the kingdom either. All through the book of the prophets about the kingdom, it says that when the kingdom comes, that everybody's going to eat grass and herbs and plants and things like that. You say, well, Brother Floyd, maybe we ought to be vegetarians now. No, you're on a cursed earth. And when you're on a cursed earth, you better eat some meat. God said we could. Furthermore, in Colossians 2:16, God said, don't let any man judge you about the kind of meat you eat. Furthermore, 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 4 says you can eat any kind of anything you want to, just so you pray over it, God will bless it. The ancient peoples that Moses was writing to were well aware and quite familiar with the idea about long ages and some kind of evolutionary development, and because all the and gradual development out of chaos. All ancient cosmogonies involve great eons of time and some kind of evolutionary development. When we go back and study ancient civilizations, they all believed in that. Only the people of God, the Jews, are the only people that ever believed in six literal days of creation about 6,000 years ago. All of the pagans already believe for thousands of years some version of evolution and eons of time. It would absolutely be impossible for Moses to express the exact opposite of what all these people believed. That is, creation out of nothing in only 6 days, any more clearly than he did in these verses we just read. Now, I would like to very quickly go over and point out to you in these last minutes some contradictions between uniformitarian geology, that's the modern theory of geology, that things are going on today like they've always been, uniform. The present is the key to the past, as opposed to what we just read in Genesis. Listen carefully. Number one, uniformitarian geology teaches that the earth's water has gradually oozed out of the interior over long ages. The Bible just said the earth was covered completely by water from the beginning of creation, Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. Uniform geology says life originated in the sea. Genesis chapter 1, verse 11 says the first life was on the land and it was plants. Contradiction, contradiction. In other words, you're going to have to make a choice tonight. You cannot, I'm not going to let you any longer be comfortable as a theistic evolutionist. You're going to believe either in evolution or God. I'm going to get you off the fence. Number three, evolution teaches that the fish and other marine organisms were there long before trees. But Genesis chapter 1, verse 11, compared to chapter 20, verse 20 and 21 says, fruit trees were before the fish. Contradiction. Number four, the sun and the moon, according to evolution, are at least as old as the earth. But we just read in Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 through 15, that the sun and the moon were made on the fourth day, and they're actually younger than the earth. That the earth was there first, and then the sun and moon shone on it. Now, there is not one single scientist that's an evolutionist that would ever believe that. There is no way to get any, you know, you want to try and be respectable in here to the scientific community. You'll never find one of them that'll agree with you on that. That the sun and the moon are younger than the earth. Number five, uniformitarian geology teaches the stars and the galaxies evolved at different times before the middle of geologic ages. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 16, all the stars were made on the fourth day at the same time. That's quite a contrast. Number six, Genesis teaches that the green plants were there the day before the sun. Well, that's impossible if a day is eons of times, because all plants have to have sunlight. Stay alive. That's God's way of showing you this really a 24-hour day. The plants were there first. Don't panic, though. God's going to turn the sun on the next day. Number seven, uniformitarian geology teaches that insects were there before birds, developed and evolved before birds. But the birds were on the fifth day and the insects on the sixth day, when you compare verse 20 to 24. Number eight, the fish evolved hundreds of millions of years before birds developed. That's what evolution teaches. Fishes, hundreds of millions of years before birds. Genesis chapter 1, verse 20 and 21 says that God created a great abundance of marine life of great variety at the same time he did the birds. Number 9, evolutionary geology says marine life began with a blob of complex chemicals. Genesis chapter 1, verse 20 and 21 says God made a great abundance of marine life of great variety when he first created it, right off the bat. Number 10, long growth, evolution says, from cells to trilobites to fish to mammals. But we just read that among the very first animals created were the great sea monsters. The largest animals that ever lived, in fact, the mammals, were right there included in that word tannin. Evolutionary geology teaches a slow ascent from some common ancestor. But 10 times in these scriptures, God says he reproduced animals and plants after their kind. Number 12, man arose from lower animals according to evolution. But we just read that God made man in his own image out of the dust of the ground in chapter 2, verse 7. And in chapter 3, verse 19, at death, man returns to dust, not to an animal existence like reincarnation or transmigration of souls would teach. I'm showing you Genesis clears up all these false cults as well. Now blow this one off. This will get you. Anthropology teaches that man and woman are simultaneous in development. In fact, anthropology teaches that the first true man and all subsequent men were formed in a woman, a genuine woman's body. In other words, that woman was first. But the Bible teaches that man was first, then woman, and she was out of a rib, not from a lower animal or even dirt. Okay? Number 14. Genesis teaches that man was told to exercise dominion over the organisms that were created in the previous days. But uniformitarian geology teaches that the vast majority of all those animals and plants were already extinct for millions of years before man ever came. And that is quite a contradiction. Anthropology teaches that the earliest men were hunters, meat eaters, and probably cannibals. We just read in chapter 1, verse 29 and 30, that man was originally a vegetarian, and that only when he sinned did he bring about death. Romans chapter 5, verse 12, and Genesis. Therefore, men did not eat animals. They didn't kill anything. Nothing died till he sinned. What a contrast. Number 16. Evolution teaches competition for survival in a food chain. The Bible taught that all animals, in verses 29 through 30 in Genesis 1, originally were vegetarians. There was no struggle for survival, no competition, therefore no evolution could have ever happened. Because evolution is based on struggle for survival, competition. The weak die, the strong go on. Make up your mind, believe God or evolution, but don't tell me you believe both. It's ignorant. It's ignorant to say you believe both. You've not thought, you've not compared, you've not studied, you hadn't written it down. Number 17. Evolution teaches it rained ever since the earth first cooled. Genesis chapter 2 verse 5 says it had never rained until well after man appeared, till after he sinned, 1656 years after he sinned with Noah. Number 18, evolution teaches the higher animals arose through changes in lower organisms. Chapter 2 verse 19 teaches of Genesis all animals were made out of dirt by fiat. Now, number 20, God made the plants on the third day, the insects on the sixth day. How did they pollinate if the days are really ages? Number 21, most living things had not survived. Let me change that. In Genesis, verse 31, everything created was very good, hence Satan couldn't be there yet. Did you hear that? The gap theory falls on its face. Everything that was on the planet, God said he surveyed the whole world and everything was very good. Therefore, Satan wasn't there. But you see, if evolution's right, most living things had not survived up to that point, and the world that the first man saw would have been far from perfect if we'd had billions of years of death, creation, struggle, and Satan falling and all the demons and all that. Number 22, and lastly, evolution teaches that creation is still continuing by evolution. But chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 says God finished creation. Colossians chapter 1, verse 17 says that Jesus Christ finished creation, that all things were created by him. Were is the past tense. Creation has ended. And so, beloved, God created everything perfect because he's a perfect creator. Therefore, any changes in a perfect creation would have to be towards less perfection. Did you hear that? God, a perfect God, created a perfect universe, a perfect earth, and perfect life with no death. Therefore, any change in perfection would be downhill and not uphill. You cannot improve perfection. And that is exactly what the best known laws of physical science teach us. The law of entropy, the second law of thermodynamics, says that everything is going downhill, left to itself, unless some outside force acts upon it with a building code and with an energy source, everything is going down. So from original perfect order to lesser order is the way things are going, because man and sin have ruined a perfect order. But God will restore it. I think we can see by what we learned last that the day-age theory that many people try to teach in Genesis chapter 1 and the gap theory that people try to teach in Genesis chapter 1 are really attempts to harmonize the great ages that evolution requires and uniformitarian geologist thinking with Scripture. Really, when you compare it to Scripture, that it's just not, it's an untenable position to really try to be an honest theistic evolutionist. In other words, I believe God did it, but I believe he did it by evolution. When you do that, one thing that you have to confront yourself with is, well, what do I believe? Who came first, Adam or the caveman? And you see, if you're going to say, well, if you say you really believe the Bible, how can you say a caveman? You know, you just can't. But if Adam came first, and then there was this brute, this caveman, quote, we've been taught that existed, well, then what are we going to say to that? How did man start off so brilliant and ended up so stupid and then got brilliant again? You know, us, Homo sapiens, we gave ourselves the name, you know, wise men. So you see, we're on the horns of a dilemma. Now, as we said last time, God made man, created man, according to Scripture, a noble creature. And the entire story that we see in the books and being told, we see on television, we see in the movies, that man began and with a, you know, no vocabulary, just like this. And over years, he developed a vocabulary. This is a fairy story. This is a myth. It's a myth. The Bible reveals that the very first man spoke fluently. And all his family spoke fluently. They talked to each other very fluently. Adam and Eve talked, it says. They talked with God, and they talked with each other, and they talked with Cain and Abel. It is a myth. In other words, and you see these stories, you know how what a great achievement it was when man first had a fire. I don't know about that. It was in chapter 3 that man had a fire of Genesis. What, the first man ever going had a fire. Offered up animals. Chapter 4, Abel was offering up animals. So all these things, these things we've been taught as evolution, see, really never happened at all. They're fairy stories. They're myths. And the horror is that Christians know everything but won't believe it. We have all the answers. If we will believe the Bible, we are wiser than all the college professors in America that won't believe the Bible, because they are trying to live with myths and fairy stories, and we know the answer. God wrote it for us. As I've tried to indicate, science deals with the present pretty much. Science, real science, see, can't go back and check the past out. Because the scientific method means you've got to be able to experiment, to observe, to duplicate something, and there's no way to duplicate. Nobody knows what happened back then or how it happened back then. Now, as you look at the blackboard here, I've listed the highlights of the first 7 days of creation. I want you to observe very carefully that no way can an honest evolutionist believe or buy the Genesis account. You cannot do it. You'll observe that on the third day, the land emerged, seas were formed, and plants and grass and trees, fruit-bearing trees, herbs, were all over the world on the third day. Now, that is not what evolution teaches. Evolution teaches that life came from the sea. Evolutionists would go out of their minds that there were flowering trees and plants on the third day of creation. That just simply will not fit. No evolutionist would buy that, I know, having been one. On the fourth day, you'll see that the sun and the moon and the stars were created by God. And there's no way any theory of the origin of the universe that is of the natural sciences, no cosmogony that you could ever study at school at the university or have any evolutionist would ever, ever believe that the earth was made before the sun, the moon, and the stars. All their cosmological studies and models come out with the sun, moon, and stars at least, you know, with the earth at least as old, and really with the others older. But you see, that isn't what the Bible teaches. The Bible has the earth created before the sun, the moon, and stars. The earth was created on the first day. Now, those of you that have been to the universities and the high schools even and the junior high school, you can see that, you know, no evolutionary model will buy this. So good, you're having to see that a Christian has to make a choice. Will you be willing to hang your head in shame when they tell you that it just can't be that way? All the brilliant people in the world know that it was evolution. Let me say this to you too. And you shouldn't have to hang your head in shame. That's the point. When you know that you know that you know the truth, you can relax. Listen to me. The only people that get uptight and get angry and get frustrated and mad when someone disagrees with them are people that are not sure that they're right. You hear that? When people, Christians, begin to argue, get violent, uptight about the doctrine of security of the believer or no security of the believer, or tongues or no tongues, and all these doctrines that we argue about in Christianity. The guy that's angry and uptight is the guy that is not sure that he's right. And he feels threatened. He feels threatened. His denomination told him when he was a child that that was the truth, and he's never read the Bible. Why bother to do that? Oh, I read John 3:16. I read the 23rd Psalm on Easter. you know how Christians do those things. And every now and then I read from Romans. And I do have my favorite verses there in Ephesians. And I've been known to dabble from time to time in Revelation. But really read the Bible, never. And therefore, when someone comes up and begins to talk to us about something that is different than what our church told us, we feel threatened. Because we aren't sure. And so we get uptight and angry. And that's why the arguments come. Listen to me. When you know, you don't get uptight. I know. I have read that book so many times. I know. And if you don't agree, it just doesn't faze me at all. Doesn't faze me at all. I said, you know, it's like you trying to tell a guy that's been making a living riding elephants for the last 10 years that there's no such thing as an elephant. And you're going to try and put, because you've never seen an elephant, never heard of an elephant. Your church doesn't believe in elephants. But a guy that's really been riding an elephant, he isn't going to get mad at you and get all uptight at you and scream and get blood, you know, red-eyed and everything with rage. You can't tell me I've been riding elephants for 10 years that there's no such thing as an elephant. If you don't want to believe it, that's fine with me. I'm going on off tomorrow. Tomorrow's Monday. I'm going to get up and go ride my elephant and make some more money. And feed my family riding elephants, which, of course, you tell me don't exist. But you see, when you, Brother George, when you really know, well, you're relaxed. You've got nothing to prove. You just tell them the truth. Well, that's okay. There really are elephants, Stephen. There really are. But if you don't want to believe it, that's okay. I'm going to go ride one anyway. Well, now that's the way the Christian should feel about evolution. We know. God said it. And therefore, now the thing that is damaging is, though, that the entire school system and educational system is dedicated to the theory of evolution. And they're taking our children and brainwashing them day after day after day after day. And ridiculing them intellectually. And little children can't take it. They can't take it. And they knuckle under over a period of time, day after day, of being into, well, yes, yes, we know your Sunday school teacher told you that. Meaning well, of course. But here at the university, of course, we put away childish things and go on to deeper, richer truths. Fairy story for adults. I want you to understand that all ancient civilizations, at the time of Moses, all of the civilizations at that time believed in some kind of version of evolution. That the theory of evolution is not new. Darwin's updated version is. And the Neo-Darwin's updated version of that is. But all ancient cosmogonies, origins of the earth, believed that the earth was very ancient. And that the stars and moons and planets were very ancient. And that man somehow evolved either from dirt or lower animals. All of them did. When Moses spoke the revelation that God gave him in Genesis and said, in the beginning, God, Elohim, bara, out of absolutely nothing, created the heavens and the earth and spoke them into being, it was the most devastating thing to the intellect of the entire world at that time. Moses counted the cost and was willing to be ridiculed for that revelation. And he wrote it down and pinned his name to it. But Christians today, when we're faced with that same opportunity to do what Moses did, believe the revelation that God gave, we tend to hide our heads, hang our heads down low and say, I'm so sorry God ever wrote Genesis. Because now I've got to look like an intellectual fool. On the fifth day, God made the sea creatures and the birds. Now, in evolution, it was millions of years after the sea creatures that there were birds. Oh, it took a lot of deaths and struggle for survival for that to happen, according to evolution, but not to God. In fact, it's very damaging. Oh, it hurts my intellect that God says it was the fifth day he made sea creatures when he had plants on the third day. That really hurts. Then the sixth day was land animals and man and Eve. Now, we're not animals. I don't care what your biology teacher told you. Don't care what the biology book says. God wrote his book first. Before a group of men sat down with an artificial classification system and said men were animals. That's wonderful. As long as you believe you're an animal, you'll justify your animal acts. Animals enjoy having sex with a lot of different mates. Well, we're just animals. God says, no, you're not. You're accountable. You're man, created in my image. Animals were not created in my image. They're not three in one, body, soul, and spirit. They're only two in one. Animals, when they don't like what another animal's doing, they just kill him. I'm just an animal. May as well kill him. I don't like what you're saying. Don't like what you're thinking. Don't like what you're doing. I just, you know, I'm not responsible. It's just my old animal instincts, you know. The moon was full and all that jazz. Animals kill to survive. So man tries to justify murder to survive. Like the animal. God says, we're accountable. We're accountable for all our actions. What I'm trying to say is that someday we'll all have to give an account of our lives to the Lord. If you're in here tonight and you don't believe God, you have never given your heart to God, you can't believe these wild stories in the Bible, someday you will have to stand before God and tell God why you don't believe it. Now, if I love you, it's up to me to tell you that. If I care anything about you, I should tell you, someday you'll have to stand before God and give an account to him for why you don't believe what he says. And I would say you should have a pretty good answer prepared. Let me also suggest that you won't be able to say a word. You really won't be able to say a word. It'll be too awesome. I want you to notice that on the sixth day, we talk about man, and I'd like for you to read with me very quickly in verse 31 of Genesis. Last time we read verse 29 and verse 30 that taught us that there were no carnivores. That originally, though there were animals that you call carnivore today, they had canine teeth and all those goodies, they didn't eat meat. Genesis 29 and 30 says that men and animals, all animals, ate grass, herbs, things like that, straw. And we know that in the kingdom, the scriptures that teach about the millennial kingdom teach the same thing will happen. That lions, there were lions at the beginning, but they didn't eat meat. They had good sharp teeth, but they chomped on grass and herbs. That's what the Bible says. And if you don't like that, you'll hate the stories about the millennial kingdom that are in the prophets. Because they also say that the lamb and the wolf and the lion and the bear and the children and poisonous snakes will all play together and they won't harm each other and they'll all eat grass. So if you don't like Genesis, you're going to hate the kingdom.